Welcome to the Ortho Eval Pal podcast, where we can help you build confidence with your orthopedic evaluation and management skills. We hope you enjoy the show. And now, for your host, Paul Marquis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 334 of the Ortho Eval Pal podcast. I'm your host, Paul Marquis, and today we're going to be talking about lumbar radiculopathy treatment. This is kind of the part two of our lumbar radiculopathy series. We're going to be discussing the influence of insurance companies on your treatment decisions when it comes to treating lumbar radiculopathy. We'll be going over some conservative treatment strategies, what to do when conservative treatment fails, who you should have on your team of providers when trying to manage lumbar radiculopathy, and expediting surgical intervention when needed, and so much more. But before we get started, I want to talk about Treadlabs, an innovative over-the-counter insole brand that's a great alternative to custom orthotics. These insoles come in four arch heights for a customized fit and can also be fitted with adjustable metatarsal pads. I consistently recommend them to my patients because I use them myself, and so does my family. Treadlabs also recently launched a sandal line that has the same arch support technology as their orthotics built right into the footbed. Simply email hello@treadlabs.com and mention me to get a free sample. All right, folks. I will do my very best to try not to get into a rant or become too opinionated while talking about treating lumbar radiculopathy. Now, I've been doing this for many years. I've seen a lot of people with lumbar radiculopathy. And there are so many variables here. I do a 7 to 8 hour course just on lumbar spine, so we could talk all day about this. But we're going to try to put this together so that we can give you a couple scenarios and talk about, you know, what we find through experience works well with managing radiculopathy. So let's get started. Let's say we have a patient who comes in. You've determined that she or he has a pure lumbar radiculopathy. Where do you start? Much of today's podcast will be based on my experience, my failures, my misjudgments, my successes, my conversations with neurosurgeons, neurologists, physiatrists, osteopaths, interventional pain specialists, you name it. We've had lots of conversations about how to manage these types of patients in the past, and that has helped to drive how I manage my patients now. So some patients may come to see you because they've tried everything else. Some may have to come to see you because insurance companies may not allow an MRI or other treatments until they've tried physical therapy. So here's something to consider. There are really two types of nerve root irritants, okay? There is mechanical compression, which is frank nerve root compression. It could be a herniated disc pushing on that nerve root, taking up space in that foramen. There could be spurs from the facets, cysts from the facets, maybe even instability or listhesis that cause physical compression to that nerve root. Then you can have a chemical irritation, such as inflammation, which will cause some swelling in that foramen and cause irritation, chemical irritation to the nerve root, and give you some radiculopathy also. And that inflammatory, you know, irritation, that can be controlled. That can be controlled with a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory, or what I've seen work really well is a steroid taper or Medrol dose pack. If this is safe for the patient, I always run this by the provider, and I, you know, just make sure that they have no precautions or contraindications, but I will recommend this oftentimes. If somebody has a fairly acute inflammatory, you know, nerve root irritation with some radiculopathy, they can do well just with taking the steroid taper to calm that down a little bit and give that the body, you know, the chance that it needs to get better. Let's say, now we'll give you a couple scenarios. Let's say that your patient comes in with an L4 pain distribution, maybe tingling down the leg. It's been going on for 2 or 3 weeks. They have good sensation, the reflexes are normal for L4 and S1, they have normal manual muscle testing, no weakness throughout the lower extremities, but maybe they have a positive straight leg raise at 45 degrees, it reproduces their pain, maybe increases the paresthesia down their leg, but there's you know, no obvious piriformis issue or any other issue that would cause a radicular type process like this. Well, first of all, There's no weakness, which is a good sign, okay? Because I always look at that as our big determinant of how we move forward with the patient. It doesn't take a lot of nerve root compression also to cause paresthesia, so I don't usually panic when I see paresthesia. If it follows a pattern, and it's not too vague, but pretty straightforward, follows a, you know, a nerve root pattern, that's not uncommon. And you can get that from just, you know, myofascial tightness and poor neural mobility in the leg. But if it's associated with the nerve root compression, then, you know, that again is something that usually can get better. It usually takes a long time, but can improve. So I don't usually panic too much about that. And you have to remember, it's only been 2 or 3 weeks. So commonly, these folks will get better on their own with time, no matter what you do with them. So oftentimes, just kind of, you know, letting things settle down a little bit, and keeping them on the right track, talking about some preventative activities that will not cause a re-exacerbation or irritation to that nerve root. So, you know, this type of radiculopathy presentation, I probably would approach this with an extension biased program. As long as you can centralize the pain with a change in the position, I'll teach them how to perform this at home. I might teach them how to get into the 90-90 position. So basically on their back, you know, and the lower legs up on a chair or up on a couch or something like that, so that they're in that 90-degree position at the knees and hips. And that is really the most neutral position you can get them in. It kind of tractions them a little bit too, and they can spend some time there just to give that foramen that nerve root a rest and opening up that foramen a little bit. I'll start them into some pelvic neutral bracing exercises, some transverse abdominis activation, and try to build on that so that they can kind of support themselves a little bit better when they're doing their functional activities later. These are the types of folks that I'll start off right away with some sciatic flossing. I have very good success with that, and the sciatic flossing has to be done very lightly. I like to start with some early cardiovascular conditioning because we know that the lumbar spine, the spine itself, does not have great vascularity to it. So I am big into cardiovascular conditioning because things like stationary biking, upper body ergometry, walking are not usually aggravators of the lumbar spine and don't usually increase radiculopathy. So if we can improve a little bit of cardiovascular conditioning and getting some fluid motion going in the spine, I think trying to normalize spinal motion is probably one of the most important things you can do with them. So I like to do that. Ultimately, these folks get into multi-directional hip strengthening, squatting with good body mechanics, proprioceptive activities. I like to do single-legged, you know, standing on an Erics pad, maybe tossing a ball or even taking a ball and making it go around your back several times. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I do a lot of proprioceptive work with my low back patients. I'll get them into bird dog exercises. I think multifidus strengthening is very important. Lateral planks. I might start modified, then go from elbow to ankles after that. And then all these folks get into an isometric lumbar extension program so that we're getting those extensors to contract, but we're trying to increase that contraction to endure over time up to a minute, maybe a minute and a half. And these folks do really well with that. Now, here's a different scenario, okay? That was kind of our easy lumbar radiculopathy. It's kind of young and early in the stages, and they can settle down and kind of get better. You can progress these people pretty nicely. But here's a little different scenario, and this is something that I see a lot of, unfortunately, and they're very difficult to manage. But patient comes in, they've had pain for a year and a half in the right gluteal region and pain going down the leg. Treatment has consisted of managing his hip pain because of this discomfort around the hip, a couple of chiropractic manipulations, which caused a peripheralization of the pain down the leg. Patient comes in and is now out of work, cannot sit at all, walks in with a flexed back and limps. The standing position, sideline position, are the only comfortable positions that the patient has. When I do my exam, I find no Achilles reflex. There's pain along the S1 distribution. There's loss of sensation in the S1 distribution. Calf strength is 3 to 3 plus over 5. Can barely do a single-legged heel raise. There's a positive straight leg raise at 30 degrees with significant reproduction of pain, paresthesia, and the patient also has a positive crossed straight leg raise test. So we know we have ourselves a pretty serious situation here, all right? Now, things to consider, the time frame, first of all, it's been a year and a half, so there should have been some natural improvement at this time. If that disc material is going to get reabsorbed, we should have seen some, you know, centralization of his pain, maybe less discomfort and better function, the ability to straighten his leg out. I mean, laying on the table can't even straighten the leg out. It has to stay bent pretty much the whole time. You know, there are very clear signs here of a severe S1 nerve root compression. Now, the insurance company won't pay for an MRI until the patient tries and fails physical therapy for 4 to 6 weeks. Now, this has become the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. This is about checking off boxes and trying to control where people go and what they do. But there are scenarios like this one where 4 to 6 weeks of PT will not be helpful. I know this. We've been through this. I've seen this a lot. I've seen patients end up with permanent weakness, permanent disability because of this weight and C process. And, you know, there are certain situations where patients should not be waiting on this. You should still give PT a try, but I knew deep down inside that there was going to be one or two visits and we were not going to get much further than that. We tried to place him in a better position, which we could barely do, tried to peripheralize the symptoms, which we could not do, tried some soft tissue modalities, and this did not work. We tried to get the patient to perform some sort of McKenzie-type activity. This made his symptoms worse immediately. So what we did is we recommended a steroid taper, number one, to try to get him out of this acute discomfort and try to settle down some of that inflammation. On the second visit, which was 2 days later, the patient comes in significantly worse just from the evaluation itself. And this is the type of patient who is going to end up with a permanent impairment. So what I did was I called the provider, I asked for a stat MRI, I said, you know, these are all of the findings, and I bulleted that. I sent a letter saying we have significant weakness, positive cross straight leg raise test, which is significant also for a large central herniated disc, positive straight leg raise, we have weakness, loss of sensation, all of these findings, which are very consistent with a significant nerve root compression. Oftentimes, you need to request a peer-to-peer so that you can call the insurance company and say, we have this scenario here in situation. We need to take care of this. And and then request that stat MRI to identify, which this did. The MRI identified this severe nerve root compression. I spoke to a neurosurgeon. We expedited the referral. And so that as soon as that referral came in, and there was approval from the insurance company, that patient was lined up with a telemedicine visit followed up by surgery. And so this patient will have that nerve root released and cleared a little bit and then get into physical therapy so we can start to work on an active program and get this patient back in some core stabilization, some lower extremity strengthening, and get them back to work as soon as possible. And so now, a couple things to think about. You're probably thinking in your head, well, could we have managed this patient before going to surgery? And I've been there and I've done that. We've tried lumbar traction in the past without any success. We've tried interventional injections, but when the nerve root is just completely being impinged, there is a structural problem there. That is an issue. So the interventional injection can help, but usually that's temporary in a situation like this. The patient needs surgery, and I've said this before. You can ride your bike with a slightly flat tire, like in the first scenario that we had, and continue to go. Add a little air to your tire, and you can continue to ride, and things will get better, and then you can kind of progress from there. But you can't move forward if you have a stick stuck across your spokes hitting the forks. You need to take that stick out, and that is one of the, it's a fact of life. If you think that all patients can be treated conservatively and never need surgery, I think you're going to get in trouble with that. And I've seen way too many people end up with permanent foot drop, permanent quad weakness, the inability to hold themselves with their calf when, you know, going downstairs and trying to decelerate, and they cannot press with the calf because they have permanent impairment there. That is life altering, and that's very disabling and can change the way a person function. I've seen somebody in my family who had this happen and ended up with a permanent foot drop because of a lack of intervention early on, and has since fallen several times catching the toe and maybe doesn't have the dorsiflexion assist brace on and fracturing ribs, injuring the shoulder and putting them at risk of other problems. So I've seen this happen. I've learned from experience that early intervention is really the most important thing here. So if your patient falls in between scenario one and scenario two, then you monitor your patient, you try to get them stronger, you try to get them functional, you do all of the things that you're supposed to do when treating lumbar radiculopathy, and you monitor them. And if they're getting stronger and having a little less pain, then continue to push in that direction. You know, there will be some bumps along the way. And what I tell people is that we look for longer good days and faster recoveries from your setbacks. So they will often say, I've got a little flare up, I got a little more pain down the leg. But maybe they recover in a day or so rather than 3 or 4 days like it was before. Maybe it just takes a couple of hours and things settle down and they're back on track. And that's kind of the progression you're looking for until they are ready to, you know, progress into higher level activity and full, you know, ADL and functional activity. So I know there's lots of information, there's lots of different directions you can go with this. Like I said, I can give a 7 to 8 hour lecture on lumbar spine, lots of information to go with here. But I hope that the scenarios that I gave you can help give you some direction on how to manage your patients with lumbar radiculopathy. And I hope that the previous episode, which if you haven't listened to, be sure to listen to that. We talk about how to evaluate the patient with lumbar radiculopathy. Hope that was helpful in regards to how to manage these folks with radiculopathy. Hope you all have a great day and take care.
We hope you've enjoyed the show. For some more awesome content, go to orthoevalpal.com. Can't wait to see you there.